Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
In the past is in the past, and we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, he's there!
Kane! It's a record! Here's Lucas Moura! Oh, they've done it!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Tottenham Way. I'm Tom Barkley of The Sun. I'm joined by George Sessions of PA. I have just got back from Munich, having watched Tottenham get absolutely battered by Bayern Munich in their final pre-season friendly before the Super Cup next week. It was quite a chastening experience for Thomas Frank's side. Admittedly, they were missing quite a few players through injury. Obviously, James Maddison, who we'll come on to in a bit. Dejan Kulusevski, still no Dom Solanke, no Destiny Udogie. Obviously, there's no more Son, having had his move to LAFC completed. We'll talk a bit about him as well. But nonetheless, it was a quite painful insight, I felt, into the level that Spurs will be facing at times this season in the Champions League. Not every week, obviously. We'll be playing Bayern Munich away from home. That is about as difficult a test as it gets in the Champions League. But still, the difference in quality was absolutely stark. Obviously, Harry Kane came back to haunt his former club, albeit, you know, obviously only a friendly, scored an absolutely clinical early goal, albeit it was probably offside, but still the finish just reminded us of why he was the and remains the record scorer for Spurs after all these years. Brilliant finish. He played really well, as did Michael Olise, who set him up for that goal. He looks absolutely fantastic. Another player that perhaps Spurs over the years could have made a move for, but is now, you know, rightly, along with Kane, a Ballon d'Or nominee. Kane obviously missed the penalty, very similar to how he did against for England against France at the 2022 Qatar World Cup. Obviously, far more important circumstances then in the quarter final when he sort of ballooned it over the bar, but quite similarly slipped as he took it. But still, Bayern scored 3 more goals in the second half. Admittedly, they were all absolute bangers, which Vicario really didn't have much of a chance of saving. But Vicario actually had a good game. He made some good saves. And if it weren't for that and some poor finishing from the likes of Leon Goretzka, it could have been really, really embarrassing. Again, just a friendly. We're probably getting ahead of ourselves, but I can understand why Spurs fans came away from that game being a bit worried about the season coming up. More so than anything, the lack of creativity in the team. Now, we know that obviously Maddison is injured now. We know they've been looking for a number 10 even before he sadly picked up that ACL injury against Newcastle and Seoul. So no doubt they will be looking to bring someone in before now in the end of the window. But I want to start with that, George. The number 10 position, how much from what you've seen of the Bayern game are you really sort of starting to worry that Thomas Frank's team, who do seem to be, let's be honest, a lot more pragmatic, at least in pre-season compared to what we saw under Postecoglou, albeit that's not a bad idea given the defeats in the league last season. How much are you worried about a lack of ingenuity in midfield?
Yeah, I think it's a huge concern. I mean, it was a concern before Maddison actually got injured, wasn't it? Because obviously Dejan Kulusevski is also out, and those two were the really, you know, the only real number 10s that Ange used last season. You know, he tried one or two others, but you know, really they're the two out and out number 10s in the squad. And now Spurs have neither of them. You know, certainly Maddison, I think, will struggle to play again this season. And Kulusevski, it sounds like, is going to be, you know, longer than we all kind of hoped. So, you know, Spurs are massively short in that area. And I think Thomas Frank's going to have to get creative because, you know, Spurs clearly want a number 10, but every club in the world now knows they need it even more than they did a week ago. And I always kind of felt that the Morgan Gibbs White fallout and how that all went, it just kind of showed again to the world that Spurs have got 60 million ready to go for a number 10. So that was already there for any rival clubs that are going to have somebody come in for their player, and now they know you're going to put a bit of a Maddison injury tax on top of that. So I think Spurs are going to, I really desperately hope they get a number 10. I'm sure they will over the next 3 weeks, but I think they're going to struggle with that process. And in the meantime, Thomas Frank is going to have to use, Pape Sarr, Lucas Bergvall. Wilson Odegaard played there once or twice under Ange, so maybe he's an option, but it doesn't fill you with confidence. We're talking about teenagers or, recently, coming out of teenagers. Pape Sarr's 22, I think. And I think, again, it just kind of, it just sort of highlights that really Spurs should have been on this from day one. I mean, this was the real priority position. They needed another number 10. Maddison had some injuries last season. Kulusevski was out for a long period. That should have really been the number one sign that they went for. As good as Kudos, I'm sure he'll become, and João Paulinho, a number 10 was the position they had to nail early on. And they have done in the past, Ange's first season, they got Maddison through the door in June, and a few other key players. So I think it, you really, the blame has to fall on the club because they knew this position, was crucial. And you've got to August and you haven't signed someone, and now you've lost your number 10 for the next 9 to 12 months. So it is a, it was a big job for Thomas Frank, but it's been made a hell of a lot harder because he's going to have no number 10 there for as long as it takes for Spurs to sign one.
Perhaps more of a reverting to what we've seen before for Spurs in terms of taking their time in the transfer market. Because that first season under Ange, they really did get their skates on to a certain extent. And to be honest, that season under Conte, after they got into the Champions League, they did some relatively quick business. But I guess last year, Solanke sort of dragged on, didn't it? They finally got him over the line in August. But it wasn't like there was some really, really quick business done, at least for experienced players. I know Werner came in on loan actually quite early, but there's, let's not go over old ground about debating whether that was a good signing or not. And here, they have done some business, but it is taking time to get these sort of key players back. I mean, I'm going to sort of dot around a little bit because I spoke to, along with the other guys out there, we spoke to Lucas Bergvall in the mix zone and Thomas Frank. So I'm going to kind of, rather than sort of focus on everything about the game, let's talk sort of topics as they come up, sort of how, as they go along, how relevant they might be. So Lucas Bergvall, we spoke to afterwards and we talked about that number 10 position. First of all, we talked about Maddison and the impact of that injury. And he said that everyone was really upset within the club, absolutely brutal news for Maddison, who obviously is due to go undergo surgery at this point for an ACL. That was always the worry when he went into that challenge, and not even sure he actually caught, or even touched Anthony Elanga in the challenge, and straight away you knew it was going to be something bad. But you were sort of hoping that it wasn't going to be as bad as this. But sadly, as you say, 9 to 12, I mean, 6 to 9 months is about as quick as it can be. But in terms of how long it takes to get back to sort of peak form of fitness, I mean, often it can be a lot longer than that. So really, really sad news for Maddison. Obviously missed the end of last season and missed the Europa League final with a ligament injury in his knee already. And yeah, but Bergvall, we basically asked him, does he feel like he can step up in that void, particularly with Kulusevski being out, which Frank said when I asked him about injuries, he said, Kulusevski is out for a long time, as I've said before. I don't know because I wasn't on tour this year, and I know he spoke a lot out there, and maybe there's other quotes coming from interviews that he did there. But as far as I can tell, the only time he's really talked about Kulusevski was actually I asked him in that initial unveiling press conference, and as far as he went on the sort of timeline of Kulusevski was basically ruling him out of the first game. He said basically, I think he said something like, put it this way, he won't make the first game. But he didn't really go into specifics, as I remember, of hinting that it could be a lot longer than that. Whereas yesterday he said he's out for a long time, as I've said before, or as I've talked about before. So I don't really know what that means. I mean, we're talking about months still. I mean, a long time would suggest months rather than weeks. So That's not great news, obviously, on that front. When we ask Bergvall, can you step up? What else is he going to say? Obviously, he's going to say he's going to back himself to do it. I guess George's question really is, from a sort of analysis point of view, do you think Lucas Bergvall's got in his locker now to be able to play in that way in the Premier League and the Champions League? Or I think I already know your answer, but or are Spurs, massively gambling if they don't bring in an experienced player in that position?
They are massively gambling. I think Lucas does have qualities that can certainly mean in the future he could be a number 10. I see him more as a box to box or even a number six for Spurs in the long run. But certainly we've seen kind of glimpses of his vision when he's got the ball. I think for his former club he would have played the number 10 a little bit as well actually because he got a few goals for them. Whereas we haven't seen, as many goals from him in a Spurs shirt, but he certainly can be kind of a number 10, and maybe, and I'm not going to say he's going to be like Dele Alli in terms of the goals he scores, but Dele Alli was a number 10 for Spurs that was just very good at pressing and arriving in the box at the right time. He wasn't so much a James Maddison number 10 who would get the ball, turn away from someone, and play it through to a winger or a forward. So I don't really think that Lucas Bergvall will be that number 10 now. Maybe in the future he will. But maybe he could do a role as kind of another body in that position, pressing the back four of the opposition. He's got an incredible engine, so he'd have no problem doing that. And I think actually he's when we have seen him in front of goal, he does have decent ability in front of goal. So he is certainly one. Out of all the options, I'd probably want to see Frank try the most. Bissau's done it a few times. And again, a similar kind of vein. I don't think technically he's going to be the best at playing through balls to the wingers or Dominic Solanke or Charlison. But again, he can provide that energy in that role and be someone that's going to be direct and running off men. But yeah, it's just it's devastating for James Maddison. It's you touched upon it there. It's going to be 6 to 9 months. He's very gonna be very lucky to play again this season, maybe a handful of games towards the end. And the other aspect of this is a World Cup year. Everyone knows how much James Maddison loves playing for his country. He's forever kind of been on the peripheral, it feels like, for that. And I'm sure the way he played in the Europa League last season, because I personally thought he was brilliant during those knockout games. He was what the one that actually, from an attacking point of view, really stepped up when you think about the kind of the goal he scored against AZ Alkmaar in the second leg and the assists he got against Frankfurt, the goal he got against Bodo. When I think Spurs needed someone to step up in those games, he really did. And I was very excited to see how he would have looked this season in the Thomas Frank team. And certainly being a World Cup year, I think motivation levels were going to be sky high. So it is really devastating for him. And I guess now, don't want to be too bleak about James Maddison, but he's 28. He's going to turn 29 this autumn, I think it is. His contract runs out in 2 years. It's generally with ACLs, it can take 18 months from the injury to kind of reach that peak level. I think we kind of saw that with Rodrigo Bentancur. It was February 23. He did his ACL, and I don't think it was really until the start of last season when we saw him back to his best. So that is around that 18-month mark. So it's terrible news for James Maddison, and it as I kind of alluded to, it leaves the Spurs squad desperately thin of a number 10. And Thomas Frank is going to need a Lucas Bergvall, a Pape Sarr, Wilson Odegaard to step up and be as good as they can in that position. Or I guess he changes formation. We've seen how well he adapted at Brentford, potentially three at the back, five, wing backs and two people up front. Maybe that'll be a solution that he will go down. And it'll be really intriguing to see what he does over the next few weeks. If Spurs can't get a number 10 in the building over the next week or two.
Just regarding Maddison, I mean, obviously he's had injuries as well already before this one. Arguably that's what led to this one. You wouldn't be surprised. You're just coming back from medial ligament injury, but obviously had ankle ligaments before then, from that infamous 4-1 Chelsea game. So he's it's unfortunate for him. Regarding Saar, from what I'm told, Frank's been really impressed with him during this preseason. It's not surprising. Obviously, he scored against a couple of goals against Wickham, and obviously scored the amazing goal against Arsenal. But just with his all-round attitude and ability, so I'm sure he'll be a big part of this season. But I think you're right. I think what would be great is them to sort of sign a Mikkel Damsgaard kind of player. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that that name hasn't sort of cropped up. May not be surprised if it did in the next few weeks. I mean, the fact that Brentford have already lost their manager, a lot of their staff, obviously Brian Mbeumo, maybe Johan Visser as well. I mean, I can't imagine they'll be looking to let anyone else go. But that is the kind of player who's got, as Bergvall said in this interview, that bit of magic which Maddison has. I'm not sure Saar has that magic. He's got other attributes, but it almost feels like from watching Frank's side play, albeit just in pre-season, so there's always time to develop it. It does feel like that number 10 is quite key to having that magic. It's not like the team's going to conjure loads of chances out in another way. So a Damsgaard kind of player, a Maddison kind of player, sadly, is really what this team is needing. Just regarding some other injuries, sort of updates, Frank said afterwards. So obviously Solanke's been out for a little while now. He did go on tour, but he never came close to playing, having sort of picked up that ankle problem. He is confident that he'll be back for the start of the season. I actually asked that question. I kind of meant the start of the Premier League rather than the Super Cup, but he just said, "Yeah, we're confident of that." So fingers crossed he's back pretty soon. With Adoghi, he said that we'll have to see over the next couple of days. Obviously, they said this last night on Thursday. I'm led to believe, like close to the player, that they're confident of getting back pretty soon, which would be really good if that is the case. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Players are often super optimistic about their own returns, and it often doesn't work out that way. For example, Dragozin, I think, was really targeting an August return. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but we'll see. That's just pretty commonplace for players to want to come back as soon as possible. I thought, once again, Brennan Johnson off the left. I'm yet to be convinced by it yesterday. Again, you're playing Bayern Munich. It's a really tough game. Didn't really get a lot of the ball, but where he fits into all this, I'm intrigued. I know that. I'm pretty sure Frank likes him a lot. Obviously, he tried to sign him at Brentford, and he'll find a way of getting him in there. But I haven't seen much from pre-season so far to suggest that he's definitely the one, that position is really the one for Brennan. And Richarlison, again, I mean, he's kind of feeding off scraps, to be fair, but he missed a bit of a, not a sitter of a header, but just he really needs a goal, doesn't he? And I think there are, there have been question marks around him for a long time, not just his injury record, but just how good he is. And if Solanke's going to have injury issues as well, then do Spurs need to sign on the centre forwards? But I think one of the things I want to bring in is let's talk about Son, I suppose. Rather than me rambling on, as a sort of long-term Spurs fan, I think you guys might get into this potentially next week when Tom and Marcus are back. I'm on holiday, but and it might make more sense having Spurs fans talk about this rather than myself, but. Just give an idea of like what kind of impact he left as a player, because he's I don't know, maybe he's one of a kind.
I think he is, yeah. It was pretty emotional reading it, actually. I've said for a while, I think it is the time for him to leave. And I will get into that. But I think first of all, it is important to talk about what an amazing player he is still, but he certainly has been for Spurs. 454 appearances, 173 goals. It's a remarkable tally for a player. And I think what always kind of stood out to me with Sonny is that it always felt like he stepped up for Spurs in the key moments. Sort of the one, there's so many games, so many goals that he scored, but one of the games that really always kind of springs to mind when I think of him is the Champions League quarterfinal first leg at home to Man City during the 2019 run to the final. It was Spurs' second game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and Harry Kane had got an ankle injury after about 20 or 30 minutes, and he was again sidelined, and it was against Pep Guardiola's all conquering Man City, and it was Son. It was nil nil until sort of 80th minute, and then Son produces a bit of magic, sort of cuts inside. He actually cut inside from the right this time, and fired it in with his left. And then he sort of produced that celebration where kind of some people thought he was saying he was sort of firing back to Pep Guardiola's, it's the Harry Kane team, but I think he was just saying that, Tottenham were a great team, but it was just a sort of one of many, many examples where when Spurs needed someone, he would be the one to step up. And I think actually, as much as, of course, Harry Kane's always going to be a legend and is the record goal scorer for Spurs, I think Sonny's legacy might have surpassed him now. And I think two reasons, probably the main one, is obviously that he won the trophy. He stuck around to be involved in that Europa League win. And whilst last season obviously wasn't his best from, a physical point of view, from a stats point of view, the game actually that I sort of have been thinking about the last week since he announced he was leaving and played the final game against Newcastle and obviously joined, LA on Wednesday, is actually the two goals he scored away to Hoffenheim. I wasn't actually there that night, but you was, Tom. And the more I think about that sort of game, that's probably the last real time we saw kind of two vintage Sonny finishes, and they weren't actually real vintage, compared to what we're used to. But I think in that season, those two goals, to get a 3-2 win, I actually think, when you take a step back, that's actually probably one of his real last big moments. And the reason of its significance for me is because that win is almost a win that guaranteed Spurs top eight, and so they didn't have to play that sort of round, the extra round of the Europa League. And I sort of think actually, if Spurs hadn't have got in the top eight and they had been knocked into that round, they would have played that game without all the key players, without Romero, without Van de Ven. And you sort of wonder actually if they would have got knocked out at that point, just because the squad couldn't cope. And as it was, they eventually that they did get the top eight, and they won the following week against Elfsborg, and it was enough to get them through. And then when they did play AZ Alkmaar, they had all the players back. So I almost think one of Sonny's final kind of real key contributions was making sure Spurs got into the Europa League top eight and avoided that knockout phase. And I guess the other key moment, I guess, in his Spurs career is probably the summer of 2021. Spurs had just finished eighth, I think it was. Jose Mourinho had been sacked in the April. Ryan Mason finished the season. Harry Kane was obviously, heavily linked and flirting with a move to Man City that summer. And Spurs appointed Nuno Espirito Santo, the most inspiring managerial appointment in the world after a long saga. And that summer, Sonny signed his new deal. At that point, you'd seen, Christian Eriksen had moved on. You'd seen all the other kind of players of the Pochettino team begin to move on, and he signed the contract to stick around when Spurs were at a pretty low ebb. And I think fans, that will be one of the things that fans remember and talk about in sort of years and decades and, longer to come, that actually Sonny stuck around. And then when Harry left, he stuck around again and he saw it through to the end, and he was the guy to lift the trophy. And when you think his final, competitive game for Spurs, was the Europa League final. And actually, again, I watched the last sort of, I took a video of the last few seconds, and Vicario, obviously takes the goal kick, and I was just sort of zoomed in on what Sonny did. And as the final whistle goes, he collapses to his knees and hugs Bentancur, and you can just see the emotion sort of pouring out of him. And I think as a kind of a last image of him as a competitive player, and then obviously subsequently his last time at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is walking around with the Europa League trophy. It's 100% the perfect way for him to go out, and really fit him for a player of his quality and dedication that he was able to do that. So yeah, I think a pretty perfect way for him to go. And even though I kind of initially was a little bit uncomfortable with sort of Spurs keeping him around for the South Korea tour, just to kind of, obviously get, have him as the real sort of figurehead for one last time. It actually, again, that was sort of perfect, wasn't it? 66,000 Korean fans going wild and getting to watch him in a Spurs shirt, for one last time. I think the way it's kind of been played, from a Sonny point of view, from the club point of view, and from Thomas Frank's point of view, I think it's been note by note perfect, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I concur with pretty much all of that. You make some really good points. And it's interesting about Hoffenheim because if you, I don't know if you watched the sort of the Spurs' own sort of documentary of their Europa League win. It's about 45 minutes long, and a lot of the players are interviewed throughout, and he talks about that game being his essentially his favorite moment from the whole campaign. Not surprising because the points you just made, really. But I remember going to that match, and I suppose they were absolutely completely collapsing in the league, and it is a tough away game. But I don't really remember there being as much jeopardy as sort of the way they look back on that game, and the way you've sort of outlined there. I suppose because I knew they were playing Elfsborg at home for the final game, just thought that's definitely going to be 3 points in the bag. But clearly, within the dressing room, they felt like that game was really, really important. And Son in particular felt it was really, really important, felt the pressure was on. And for him to deliver in that game, you're right, that was probably his last big contribution. I mean, I don't, I wasn't covering the club. I started covering the club sort of towards the end of the season where they got it back into the Champions League. And even though I remember lots of sunny moments, I don't remember them sort of, as perfectly in my mind as you guys will. But I definitely remember being at Norwich on the final day of the season when Spurs battered them, and even afterwards in the press room afterwards, we were asking Conte, are you going to stay? And he still wouldn't commit. But the goals that Sonny scored in that game to share the golden boot with Mo Salah were just sort of typical of his absolute amazing quality. I mean, my hero growing up was Alan Shearer. He scored some wonder goals, but a lot of them were tap-ins as well. I mean, the amount of like brilliant strikes that Son scored off both feet just were outrageous, really, and really sort of show what an unbelievable player he is. And I think, to be honest, if he'd won more things, which is really more of a Spurs thing, to be honest, than Son, he would probably be more in the conversation for, one of the best wingers in the Premier League history, even though that's what Eddie Howe called him. I think he's like, on the long list, put it that way, but I don't think many people really, unless they're big Tottenham fans and use in sort of going for heart over head, would have him in their sort of all-time 11. But he might be on the bench for some. I mean, he was a brilliant player and a real unifier in the dressing room. I mean, it's not like, from what I've heard, there have been a bunch of cliques in the dressing room. But when Postecoglou came in, for example, it was quite a disparate group with a lot of new players, other players, some who weren't particularly, a bit unsettled. And the way that Son was able to have this sort of social butterfly aspect to his personality and hover between all kinds of groups and bring them all together sounds like was a really, really important part of it. So not only that, but obviously his quality. And that actually leads me on to two sort of key points, really, that I wanted to follow on from about Son, rather than sort of just going on about his career, which you guys can do in another podcast at length. Two issues. One is the captaincy. So we asked. Let's start with that then. So I asked Frank afterwards, is he any closer to picking a new captain? And he said closer, but haven't made a decision yet. And I sort of prompted again, just to confirm, you haven't made a decision. It's not just you're not telling us. He said no decision. At least that's what he's saying publicly. We've seen Romero have the captaincy mainly during pre-season. I mean, he's put in some absolutely wild challenges as only he can against Bayern, particularly on his old teammate Harry Kane. I mean, Romero, from what I'm told, is massively influential in the dressing room, but he doesn't really speak much to the media, at least the English press, which I might be overblowing the significance of that, but that is part of the job when you're the captain. So I wonder if that's one sort of thing against his candidacy. But like I say, he seems to be very, very influential. And I don't really see a whole bunch of other alternatives. I mean, Vicario, but then who seems to be the full package, but he's a goalkeeper and not everyone loves having the goalkeeper be the captain. Maybe Porro, but more because he's sort of a regular. Ben Davies seems to be really liked by Thomas Frank, but how often is he actually going to play? Bentancur again, but similar sort of thing with Romero. I think all lit roads kind of lead to Romero, but then again, with him, you've got some of his outspoken comments towards the hierarchy in the last year or so. I mean, it'd be quite an interesting decision to give the captaincy to someone like that. What do you think? I mean, it's a bit of a conundrum, I would say.
It is a tricky one, isn't it? I have a very, completely not based on anything that I've been told, but just a tiny hunch that I wonder if actually Ben Davies will be the club captain, and then maybe Romero is the sort of first team captain. We've seen teams go down that route before, and the only reason I sort of wonder that is because, as you mentioned, Romero has been outspoken against the board, hasn't he, before? And it was after that Chelsea defeat in December, wasn't it? He spoke about kind of other clubs, improve their squads, and we haven't. And he's not been shy at doing that kind of on other occasions. The other kind of, I guess, awkward scenario that could present itself if he is made captain. It was only a couple of months ago he spoke about, being interested in a fresh challenge, and spoke about La Liga being a league that he always wanted to play in. And I think if you're Daniel Levy, under no circumstance do you want a situation where you've gone back to Sol Campbell, where you've got your captain, who's got a deal running out because Romero's only got 2 years left. And if Spurs have a poor season this year, and Romero has been made the captain, next summer you're going to have your captain trying to force his way out of the club. It's just, from an optics point of view, it's just a terrible look. But I agree, there's very few other kind of, standout candidates, and he obviously is a fantastic player on his day, and I feel like he really dragged Spurs to that Europa League trophy as well. So, I think Romero will be the captain in kind of in everything, but just maybe the official, sort of title of it, and that's why I just wonder if Ben Davies, especially the way Thomas Frank's been talking about him, if he will be the captain because of his experience and because he's been there for so long, and then sort of, Romero is going to essentially be the captain because he's going to start every week. But it just kind of would help Spurs avoid maybe an awkward situation further down the line if Christian Romero does decide in 12 months' time that he wants to leave.
Maybe so, and I did think that possibility as well. The only thing I would say is, if Ben Davies is club captain, and so maybe that might mean that he could speak to the media more than Romero. I don't know if broadcasters will want; they might push back on a player who's not playing being the one who speaks sort of publicly. I mean, we might as well, but so I don't know if that would really solve that issue. But you're right about it might make it a bit easier regarding any kind of a situation where the captain is running his contract down. We'll see, I suppose. And the other issue regarding Sonny leaving is literally that left wing position. Now, I still of the is of am of the mind that the club probably feel like they've got their ducks in a row on that already. They've signed Matisse Thel permanently. They signed Wilson Odegaard last season. Obviously, got injured a lot. These are young players, but they've invested relatively heavily in both of those. There's obviously Brennan Johnson who can play out left as well. And I wonder if that's they'll think, well, we're gonna go with that. And they've signed Kudus and he's effectively Son's replacement, albeit on the other side of the pitch, even though he probably can play on the left as well. And that's what I was thinking. And then I'll just read you this comment to the question. I put it to Frank, basically, will you assign a replacement? Just put it out there like that, see what he said. And here's his response. Sonny was a key player for 10 seasons. He has left the club. We have both good young players in Matisse and Wilson, and they are really promising and can perform. Brennan can also play that side. As I said, we are in the market. If we think that we can find the right one who can improve the team, then he will be signed. If we can't, then not. All right, a lot of if, buts, and maybes. But to be honest, that for me seems like a hint, or at least opening the door to not ruling out signing a Son replacement. I wonder if that's a reaction to how games have gone in the last few weeks. Let's see what happens. But what do you read from that? As a Spurs fan, are you more optimistic hearing that they actually might go and sign a Son replacement, or are you still thinking that's unlikely?
I think I would be concerned if Spurs go into the season with Wilson Odegaard and Matthijs Tel as your two main guys on the left wing. As much as Tel in particular, I really like him, and I think he is going to become a very good player. He isn't there yet, and Spurs are going to have two guys with great potential. The word that fans absolutely hate. One of them is going to be starting every week, and they're going to be starting against Champions League opposition, aren't they? Sort of 8 times at least during the first half of the season. So yeah, I think Spurs should be trying to sign someone to replace Sonny. There is a guy, across London, plays in red and blue. Just won the FA Cup a couple of months ago. If I was Spurs, I think I'd be certainly would have looked at him a little while ago, especially because he can play as number 10 as well. And obviously talking about Eberechi Eze, but I don't know with those quotes. It's kind of one of those where, is Thomas Frank just kind of saying what he kind of has to say, that if an opportunity comes up, Spurs are gonna make the most of it. I would probably maybe turn it and say, Spurs shouldn't be waiting for an opportunity here. That also should have been a, a priority position, especially if they view Kudos as someone that's going to be, right wing. Because I just kind of look at the squad as it is, and it just doesn't really feel like it's come on from last season to this season. I guess João Paulinho is probably the one extra player in there, if you say that Kudos has effectively replaced Sonny as a wide player. But when we think about how much Spurs' squad struggled last season, now you've got to not play Europa League opposition, you've got to play Champions League opposition. It's it just kind of, yeah, I think it is a, I think it's pre-season, so wild takes and overblown reactions probably shouldn't really be, be sort of, said so soon. But you can understand why there's a lot of anxiety and kind of frustration amongst the Spurs fan base, because winning the Europa League and getting into the Champions League through the back door should really be a sliding doors moment for the club, where they say, okay, we have got in the Champions League this season. Let's spend, not spend necessarily the money that Liverpool have spent or Manchester City, but I think they should have been signing at least two other players that were either going to be starting players or your first options off the bench. And then all of a sudden, you just take the quality level of the squad up by a couple of notches. And when Spurs do inevitably get injuries, as we are seeing now, you've still got players on the bench that are going to impact games. The kind of issue for me now is, I mean, last season Spurs had a very strong starting 11, and then probably three to five players on the bench that could either be starters or they would come on and make an impact. But once you get two or three injuries, all of a sudden those guys are starting, and your bench is one, two players that are going to come on and make an impact, and the rest it's, guys with potential who maybe one in four will do very well, but the other three games they're not going to make the impact you need. And I think Spurs are still in that kind of similar situation, and that's where, if you're a team that's going to be playing Champions League football and you're talking as a club that you want to compete in four competitions, and obviously, Daniel Levy said what he said about wanting to win the Premier League. Not this season, clearly, but he said that as an ambition. You can't be going into the season with Matty Taylor, who's 20 years old, and Wilson Odegaard, that's 20 years old. And between them, they last season got, if I'm going off the top of my head, what, six goals, I think, in all competitions for Spurs. Maybe five, maybe seven. But it's a massive concern, I think, if they're going to go into the season with those two. But there's a lot of work to do, isn't there? They need a number 10. They're talking about signing the centre back. You had a left wing, on top of that. It's kind of, how do you do that in 3 weeks? It's, yeah, it's not a great situation, I think, at the minute.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Eze's right there, isn't he? He's perfect as a signing because he can play number 10 and he can play left wing, as you pointed out. So obviously Tell and Odegaard, when they signed, will have wanted a pathway into the first team, as much as the prestige of Tottenham will have been a big part of them signing. But particularly Tell, when he's already at a big club like Bayern Munich, he's not going to leave just not to get any game time. But you're right, it doesn't look quite ready yet. And I think Eze's perfect because it's not like he's just a left winger, but he can play there, and I think he can be very good there. And then hopefully, when the other guys are sort of kicking on, he can be that dynamic number 10 that we believe. The dynamism is a big attribute that Frank wants from a new number 10, which is part of the reason why he liked Gibbs White. I mean, Eze also is a big game player. We saw that from the FA Cup final. We've seen it in numerous games. I like the way he's been stepping up for England at times. I think he's at the stage of his career where it's perfect, isn't it? He's looking for that move where he can really kick on. He's gonna have that hunger. He's gonna have that enthusiasm, which Spurs can really, really benefit from. And he's got that sort of ability to get people off their seats. Bergvall talking about that magic that number 10 has. Spurs are kind of right now, with their injuries, are lacking distinctly in that magic. But Eze's definitely one of those players who can bring it. He's an old school kind of entertainer in that way. I mean, I guess the only question mark is how much he'd want to come to Tottenham. I was led to believe earlier this window that he would be interested in coming to the Spurs and playing under Frank, but he'd also be interested in going to a lot of other clubs. He may even stay at Palace. You know what Palace are like with being sellers. If they lose Guéhi, they're not going to be desperate to lose another player, and he's loved down in South London. Right now, I think Arsenal's probably more likely. And let's be honest, as much as Spurs fans don't want to hear this, Arsenal are probably more attractive to most players right now, even though Spurs are now back in the Champions League and have actually won a trophy more recently than Arsenal. And so he may be waiting out on that one. Although I'm led to believe from the Arsenal perspective, if they are going to go for Eze, which is not no by no means guaranteed, it's probably something that will happen quite late in the window. So I imagine with Eze, whatever happens, even if Spurs manage to get him, it might be a bit of a waiting game. Which is frustrating, I know, particularly after a performance like last night and the season sort of being upon us. The season is upon us. The league season obviously starts next week against Burnley, but before then, there's the small matter of the Super Cup. Now, I would have been going there had I realised about it when Spurs were winning the Europa League. Unfortunately, I'd already booked holiday, so I'm going to miss it. But I guess, George, going into that match against the mighty Paris Saint-Germain, who after so many years of, doing their best and always being the to try and get to the top table and kind of always being the bridesmaid, they now very much are like the front and centre of world football with some of their attacking players, and their manager and blew Inter Milan away in that Champions League final. They've got, as I say, so many exciting players. They've gone through that period of signing all the superstars, and it not quite working. And now they've got just talent coming out of their ears. I mean, Désiré Doué, interestingly, Spurs tried to sign him last summer, a bit of a sort of what might have been from that perspective. But having watched Spurs get sort of blown away in a friendly against Bayern Munich, are you holding out any hope against PSG?
It's not the best preparation. I guess there's a few things with this. I guess one major issue, with, and I've kind of wondered this, after Spurs won the Europa League, as and I sort of jumped ahead to the Super Cup, is actually PSG only returned to pre-season training, Wednesday of this week, so August the 6th, because their season didn't finish until July 13th because they had the Club World Cup, and they made the final of that. So I've always kind of, I think that's an intriguing element that actually, from a fitness point of view, okay, they only played a month ago, but there should certainly be, they shouldn't be at the level that Spurs are. So that's one area where Spurs, will hope to kind of take some sort of advantage. And we've already seen with Chelsea's players, they've only just returned to pre-season after they had their extended season. They've already got a big injury. Levy Colwill has done his ACL, like James Maddison, and I don't think, those things are necessarily a coincidence. The players are playing so many minutes now, so many games. You are going to see injuries. So I sort of wonder what kind of shape PSG will be in. So that gives Spurs an opportunity. Clearly, PSG are the best team, in Europe, if not the world. Given how they dismantled Inter Milan in that final, and I guess Luis Enrique is another kind of, interesting case, because he was heavily linked with the Spurs job in the summer of 2023. Sounded very much like a kind of, Fabio Paratici was sort of driving that, in his consultancy role at the time. But obviously didn't happen, and he went to PSG, and the rest is history. But no, it is it's a massive occasion for Spurs, and I guess I think it's a little bit of a shame at the minute it doesn't, it hasn't had much of a build up. I'm sure in the days leading up to it will, but it's brilliant for Tottenham as a, to be in this competition, because it's hugely prestigious. If they win, they're technically the champions of Europe, ahead of PSG. But I think it's a big game for Thomas Frank. I think it's fine losing 4-0 to Bayern Munich in a pre-season friendly. You can brush that off once the season starts and you get wins under your belt. But if Spurs go to Udine next Wednesday and they get battered, which could happen because it happened to Inter Milan, it's happened to plenty of teams against PSG, it's just going to kill all the kind of momentum and feel-good factor that kind of was generated with the Europa League win. And all of a sudden you go into his first home game against Burnley, and the feeling is going to be flat. Madison's injured, there's no Son, you've just lost heavily in a big final. So I think, I'm not saying that Thomas Frank has to win this game, but I just think Spurs need to put in a real strong, and just put in a performance that's going to kind of show to the world, actually, Spurs do mean business. Thomas Frank does mean business. They're not going to be an easy 3 points in the Champions League, and I'm sure Thomas Frank would have been looking at this fixture for weeks and months and thinking of different types of game plans and ways that he can kind of hurt PSG. He's notoriously did very well in the kind of the games against the real stern opposition for Brentford. So I'm intrigued to see what kind of plan he comes up with. And even though Spurs have got injuries, you'd like to hope that, as you were sort of saying earlier, that Dominic Solanke will hopefully be available for this game and Destiny Adoyigi potentially as well. So it's a massive occasion. Obviously Ange winning the Europa League has helped Spurs get in this final and potential to win two cups in the space of 3 months. So it's a as I say, a brilliant occasion for Spurs. But I think it is a big game for Thomas Frank and this squad. You don't want to have to go into the new Premier League season, after a very heavy defeat. On the flip side, if they win it, Thomas Frank's won a trophy, Spurs have got another trophy, and all of a sudden the kind of the last couple of weeks of ups and downs, injuries and lack of transfer activity will kind of quickly be forgotten because Spurs will have another trophy. So that's the upside for Thomas Frank and this squad if they can get over the line.
Yeah, let's focus on that upside possibility rather than being too sort of down in the dumps after the Bayern game and the lack of transfer business. I'm as a neutral far more optimistic about Spurs' chances after the point you've made about PSG only just coming back from back to pre-season training, so they're clearly going to be still on the beach. They're not going to be, they're gonna be blowing the whole game, and Spurs should be be a few days away from the Premier League. So that actually kind of a massive factor in this game, but we'll see. I'm sure you guys will hopefully do a sort of reaction podcast after the game. Like I say, I'm away next week, but hoping to do this regularly for the season ahead. And let's hope that Spurs can put in some much better performances than they did at the Allianz the other night. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Cheers.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.